Absolutely. Well, 7 days to a changing of the guard. The changing of the guard. I mean, I was watching today. Listen, I don't hold any ill will towards Biden, the man. I take it back. Okay, I don't hold ill will towards him. I think he's pitiful. How about that? I'm ready for him to be gone. I can't even stand watching him take the stand in the podium anymore. I'm so beyond his presidency that I've already checked out of his stuff. He did a speech today, by the way. Stood up. I don't know if he made it through. The part that I saw, he was like fumbling around in his pockets trying to find his notes. But he actually made the statement, compared to 4 years ago, America is stronger. During my presidency, I've increased America's power in every dimension. Who feeds him these lines? And does he really believe that, do you think? What do you think, JP? Does he believe that?
I don't know. He probably does. He's probably told this stuff by his staffers. He also made a tweet that went viral, him saying that he's leaving Trump with one of the greatest economies ever.
Oh, gosh.
You know, stuff like that. He's being told to say the stuff, but he's probably in a position where he thinks it's true. Yeah. Because he's being told nothing but that, you know, all the time by his staffers.
There was a scene. All right. This classic cult movie, Escape from New York. You ever seen it?
Mm.
Oh my gosh. See, now this, every time we do this, you make me feel old.
Yeah.
All right, Escape from New York. And the main character is this guy named Snake Plissken. And he's like this former special operator with a big snake tattoo, you know, on his chest and stomach. And anyway, Snake Plissken, he's sent into New York's Manhattan Island, has been converted to just one massive prison. They just walled off Manhattan Island and just basically drop people in there and let them live. Good luck, fellas. And so it's chaos inside. It's more like San Francisco.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay. So they have Snake Plissken goes in trying to rescue the president because Air Force One crashed inside the wall. And he finally finds, apparently the president was wearing like a tracker wrist a bracelet, which it was filmed in like 1979. So the tracker thing is like the size of a small screen TV with, you know, these bright red digital numbers. Anyway, he finally finds, he has a device that helps him track down where that is. He finally gets there, and there's a over in the corner is a guy being beaten up who's wearing the bracelet. And he fights off the guy who's beating him up, and it turns out just an old hobo who's just sitting there, and he looks at him and he says, "I knew I was the president when I wore this bracelet. I knew I was the president. Yes, sir, I'm the president." And that's the way I feel Joe Biden is.
Yeah. It's bad.
"I knew I was president when they gave me the Oval Office. That's when I knew I was president." That's what it feels like.
Yeah. He also said in a speech that he'd, you know, bragging about what he's done at the border, and it's all, nobody believes what he's saying anymore. He's just, let him go on his way.
Okay, I don't get it. So what's going to happen in the next few days? A lot is on tap. Trump gets sworn in next Monday. I've got one article. Let me look through my stack here real quick. He says he's coming in with upwards of 100 executive orders on day one. No kidding. Story here on Red State. Trump will be inaugurated as the nation's 47th president on January 20th. Reports indicate he plans to arrive at the Oval Office armed with over 100 executive orders dealing with border and energy security. He met with Republican senators Wednesday, talked about his plans, and some of the participants are revealing what he said. So one of those, Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, said that, yeah, Trump told us in our meeting, 100 executive orders to address these issues. Things that are going to be massive executive authorities on how to tackle the border, immigration. Social media post on Monday, Trump indicated he will also terminate many of Biden's executive orders. And so you look at that and go, what can the executive do without legislation? Well, there's quite a few things. Policy is set. Tariffs are put in place by the executive. I mean, he's already doing stuff. He's not even in office yet. But I look forward to Tom Homan just taking the reins of the border and just going, woo, and just like cracking the whip. But Trump also said, we're not going to accept anymore. Actually, this is Stephen Miller, his deputy chief of staff, said, we're not going to accept anymore that the Defense Department doesn't have a right to help secure the border. I understand posse comitatus. I am an attorney, and I'm also, oh, by the way, for those who don't know, in Chattanooga, a retired 06, a colonel, with tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. I understand the use of U.S. troops on U.S. soil. I understand that. But in cases of national emergency, in the threat to life, limb, and property, the use of U.S. troops can be used. Think about it. There have been any number of times. I was out in Montana years ago for some training, and the 101st Airborne was sent out to help fight brush fires that were burning like two-thirds of the state. I can think to, you know, the desegregation of schools when, you know, Governor Wallace stood in the door. And then, you know, the National Guard gets called out. But then there was also federal troops that were called out in Arkansas because they didn't trust the governor to actually call out his National Guard to make sure that desegregation went well. All that to say, I do believe you're going to see some executive orders that will employ the U.S. military for things like deportation, border security, helping staff up secure checkpoints, the use of drones, surveillance systems, ISR capability, all of that. All of that, I think, is going to be available, and I think you're going to see it sooner than later. They don't have, and the Customs and Border Patrol can then be released to actually do their jobs as opposed to processing people. Hopefully, too, we're going to have a lot fewer people to process. One of the other things happening in the next few days is the confirmations are already starting for his appointees. So the nominations that Trump has made for the appointments to his cabinet, those kick off as of tomorrow, I believe. Yeah, tomorrow. I got a piece here from Fox, Dateline today, actually. Republicans will begin holding confirmation hearings this week for more than a dozen of the high-profile administration picks for President-elect Trump's next term. So right now, what we know is that Pete Hegseth goes before the Senate Armed Services Committee tomorrow at 9:30. We're hearing he has the votes. That's good. He'd better. Senator Marco Rubio for Secretary of State, he'll be going before the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations tomorrow at 10 a.m. We've got the Kristi Noem, Governor Kristi Noem, is going to go before the Homeland Security Governmental Affairs Committee on Wednesday at 9 a.m. We got also Tuesday, tomorrow, Secretary of Veterans Affairs Doug Collins out of Georgia is going to be having his hearing. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum is going to be Secretary of the Interior. He's got his on tomorrow, I believe. Pam Bondi for Attorney General. And John Ratcliffe for Central Intelligence Agency, and Russell Voigt for the Office of Management and Budget, and Sean Duffy for Secretary of Transportation, and Chris Wright for all of them. All of those have their hearings, their committee hearings on Wednesday. So the way the process works, if you don't know, is these confirmations have to go through a related committee in the U.S. Senate, which will vet them, and, you know, some will rail against them. I like the fact that Trump's nominees are already, they're already announced. We're not coming into the final days trying to figure out who he's going to appoint to this, that, or the other. And I guarantee you he's got a couple of backup plans, but for the most part, I think you're going to see the majority, if not all of these, get confirmed. So they will go through committee. The committee then reports out to the broader Senate. The Senate majority leader will then bring them to the floor for a confirmations vote. Democrats will have their say. They'll try and filibuster. They won't be able to. I think the majority of these are going to get passed mostly on a party line vote, and there'll be a few bipartisans. I mean, I have a hard time believing that, like, Pam Bondi is not going to be able to get bipartisan support. I mean, how many glass ceilings do they need from us before we get bipartisan?
Yeah, it's... But you're not going to get any bipartisan from any of the votes with Democrats. I mean, maybe some, but as a whole, you're going to see them, quote, making a stand. We're standing against Trump. We're not going to vote for any of it, you know. But also, I'll say I think it's fitting that Hegseth's the first one because it gives Republicans an opportunity to set the tone because he was the most controversial and the most fought at, like, against nomination, even with some Republicans. So if Republicans can pass that one, which I think they will, I think that sets the tone from the Republican side of, you know, we're not going to do anything to get in Trump's way. Like, we're going to help him pass his agenda. So I hope the first one with Hegseth getting passed sets the tone for the rest.
I think I agree with that. And I think that also the other thing is by setting them all this week and a lot of them at the same time, like there's going to be committee hearings going on up and down the hallways, if you know what I'm saying, all at one time. That that prevents the press from being able to capitalize on any one particular moment. And the press is going to be all spread out. At the same time, the liberal press. And at the same time, that also keeps the Democrats hopping. And they can't be grandstanding forever on one nominee holding up all the others by grandstanding over here. They're spread out. So, and they're all going on at the same time. So I think that's cool. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll do it right now. We'll take a break. We'll come right back. I've got more on Dipper number one, the changing of the guard. And then don't forget, coming up top of the hour, U.S. Senator Katie Britt to talk about it more. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades in here. That's what we're doing. Text lines. Jerry from Decatur says, if I was a left-wing liberal, I'd move to Europe. At least their forests are clean from deadness. Airborne. Wow. Yeah. Well, you know what? That's just from California, though. Luann from Huntsville says, Snake Plissken, I thought he was dead. That's a line from the movie, by the way. They said that to him over and over again. Snake Plissken, I heard you were dead.
Guess I got another movie to my list.
I hope this list is getting followed up on.
It will. I'll find a day to sit down.
Have you seen Braveheart?
No, I haven't yet.
What?
No.
JP, what?
I just got to sit down one weekend.
As soon as football season's over, you got your work cut out for you.
I got time, yeah.
Brian from Huntsville checking in saying, Kurt Russell as Snake, awesome. Also, the Jungle Boy from Gilligan's Island. Was he the Jungle Boy from Gilligan's Island? I did not recall that.
I guess he was.
Oh, man. Aunt Sister from Huntsville, Alabama, checking in, says, anyway, about the drones, did they just stop? Are they still strafing the Northeast? The media doesn't care? I don't know. I haven't heard anything new about the drones. They backed off on the drones.
I think they've stopped the drones, at least.
Yeah. And we don't know why they've stopped. We just know we're not seeing them anymore. I think social media would be taking care of that for us if they were. Mm-hmm. Ed, except for the one that some goofball was flying in the fire zone and flew right into one of the fire planes.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that. And then Ed P. from Huntsville sending me a YouTube link, and you know I can't look at it right now because I'm on the air, Ed P. Anyway, we'll come back to that. Back to the changing of the guard. One of the things that I am very much looking forward to is what's Trump going to do about the Jan 6 convictees? Because that was a kangaroo court, man. Especially when you consider that now we know for a fact that the Jan 6 Commission withheld evidence. As an attorney, I can tell you that if you don't turn over evidence that is exculpatory in nature, that it's a reversible error. If you withheld things that could have gone to the defense's credit or effort to defend, then you are committing reversible error. Well, Trump's going to take care of a lot of these. Vice President-elect, according to Daily Caller, Dateline yesterday, Vice President-elect J.D. Vance says Sunday on Fox News that the incoming administration's plan for Jan 6 pardons will depend on whether the imprisoned protesters were violent. And I get that. If they committed violent acts, if they were beating on somebody, if they were destroying property intentionally and it's known, I understand. They may have to deal with some consequences. But Biden's Department of Justice prosecuted over 1,200 individuals. 1,200. And I got news. Most of those were being convicted on misdemeanor charges of trespassing. And then they added in a charge that was never designed for this that clearly should be considered reversible, in my opinion, because it's never been, it was not intended. You can look at the legislative intent when it was passed. The idea they interfered with a government function. No, they didn't. But at the same time, when the Tennessee State Capitol was taken over by protesters, did anybody get arrested and you know, thrown in jail? Did they have a big commission to go ahead and decide who else they can prosecute? Did they withhold evidence? No. Anyway, Trump's going to be, I think he's going to be pardoning quite a few, if not the most of these, but I believe some of the violent ones will remain incarcerated, and that'll be because they were no longer protesting. They were rioters. But there was no insurrection. So hear it from me right here on Right Side Radio. I don't agree with the narrative the left has portrayed that was an insurrection. All right, we're taking a break. We're coming right back. We're still in the changing of the guard. I got plenty more in my stack, and we also got U.S. Senator Katie Britt, followed by Congressman Gary Palmer. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And the Southeast syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on a Meatloaf Monday. So we're still in Dipper number one. I'm calling it the changing of the guard. We have a whole lot before us. Even this week, before Trump gets sworn in next week, the events of this week alone, just on the confirmations, are going to be pretty full, pretty robust. But the policy formation is underway, and the implementation thereof is already being planned, and the executive orders. But y'all, the amount of work that still has to be done, though, by the other branch of government. Oh, by the way, the Congress has work to do. And we've got the Trump agenda. They're talking about whether it's going to be in a reconciliation bill or whether it's going to be spread out over several. They're also got the confirmations of his appointees to the U.S. Senate. And then we've also got some legislation that's still moving, because there are other things that are part of what I might call the Trump agenda, but are the agendas that are driven by members of the body, not the least of which is our own U.S. Senator Katie Britt. So U.S. Senator Katie Britt, oh, by the way, a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, also a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee, among others. And she has also really been named as the deputy whip for the Republican caucus up in the Senate. And she's on the line right now. Senator Britt, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thank you so much for letting me join you and for that introduction. It's always good to be with you and in front of your listeners. I have to ask, what is Meatloaf Monday?
Well, we talk about food around here a lot, and somehow or another that one has had a good ring to it. So
I like it.
One of the Meat and Three restaurants down the road from the studio does Meatloaf Monday, and we decided to grab that and make it our mantra on Mondays.
I am here for it. I am here for it. I talked with the woman next to me all the way up here about different restaurants in Alabama that we love. So I'm going to have to find out what that is and go visit.
All right. Pruitt's Barbecue in Gadsden, Meatloaf Monday. We'll take you there one day.
All right. Sounds good. I look forward to it.
Hey, let me. I want to dive in on several things, but mainly, I guess what I want to talk with you about today is the Lake and Riley Act and the confirmations process for Trump's nominations. Let's take our pick here. Let's go Lake and Riley first. I mean, that bill you've got seems to be moving in a bipartisan fashion. And tell us what you got.
Yeah, look, Phil, I am really excited about the momentum that's building behind Lake and Riley. I am excited about what's possible for our country. I think what you are seeing is Democrats are finally understanding they have one choice, and that is they have to decide between whether they continue their open border policies or whether they put the safety and security of Americans first. And so it was excited to roll it back out last week. As you know, it passed the House last year with 37 votes. It came back again and passed this Congress with 48 votes. Actually, our entire Alabama delegation voted for it, so Democrat and Republican, so that was an exciting moment. As we continued to move forward on that, I was very excited to have my good friend John Fetterman co-sponsor the Lake and Riley Act and come out, be the very first Democrat willing to stand with us here in the Senate. After that, obviously, we pulled in Ruben Gallego as a actual co-sponsor of the bill. And if you're doing the math, there are 53 Republicans when we are all here and ready to go, which we hope that'll be the case this week, with Jim Justice being sworn in this week. Additionally, J.D. Vance's replacement, the new senator from Ohio, should be named and sworn in this week before we take the next 60-vote threshold vote. So we're excited about that, but that puts us at 53. John Fetterman and Ruben Gallego put it at 55. We have got to get to 60, and I think that the momentum, what I am hearing, the conversations I'm having with my colleagues, I am calling Democrats, I am talking to Democrats, I am saying now is the time to act, now is the time to save America's children, and now is the time to actually get things done. And I have been thrilled by both the support and the momentum this bill continues to gain.
Well, it's kind of funny. You got appointed as deputy whip like in the last week, and you're whipping your own bill right off the bat. I mean, like, you didn't even slow down. You just said, I'm the deputy whip, and you start cracking the whip. That's what it looks like.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, I was honored to be selected to serve in that position, and so I am going to just continue to work diligently for the conference, to work diligently for President Trump to move his agenda forward. I mean, as you know, look, particularly when you think about something like border security, there was no more litigated issue over the last 4 years than that. And so knowing what the American people want and then having an opportunity to be in the position, as you know, I have never been in the majority as a U.S. senator, only having been here one Congress. And so I know that the American people are depending on us to actually have action. I mean, Phil, we've we've talked and talked and talked. Now we're in charge. We have the House, the Senate,
right.
And within the next week, we will have the White House. Praise be to God. And so now we got to go get something done. And so I am working those votes. I am working through issues with people, explaining the impact of the bill, and excited about what's possible.
Well, I am too. And real quickly, that particular bill, of course, named for Laken Riley, the young lady who was murdered by an illegal immigrant in Georgia. And the bill does a couple of things. I mean, it has a deportation piece built into it, if I'm not mistaken, but it also allows states to sue the Department of Homeland Security. Am I right?
You are correct, Phil. So first off, what it does is if an illegal alien is convicted of or is charged with, arrested for, convicted of a theft-related crime, it allows for, you know, detention of that migrant.
Okay.
And what you see is it does not take away a migrant's or, you know, illegal alien's due process. You know, if they have an immigration status proceeding that's moving forward, if they're in their criminal proceeding, that is allowed to move forward. But what it does do is it takes them off the street. And if this bill had been law, Laken Riley would still be alive. When it comes to what the states can do, it actually gives the states standing to push back when the Department of Homeland Security, Phil, is not enforcing immigration law. And so you've seen this time and time again, when we know what the federal government should be doing, when we know what Secretary Mayorkas should be doing, and they're not, this allows states to actually force the issue there, and I think it could make a world of difference.
Well, I agree, and by the way, I said deportation, I meant detention, so thank you for clarifying that. But so the reality is, what we're not going to do is have a criminal illegal alien. We're going to just running the streets and you know, catch and release again and again. Basically, they'll be detained, and that's just the way it's going to be as an act of Congress. But then I love
right,
the idea of the AGs being able to bring redress on behalf of their state citizen. That's great.
Yeah, and so, Phil, when you think about what you just said, when you committed a crime, I was getting asked about this yesterday, was on CNN's Jake Tapper's State of the Union, and he said something about this. I said, Jake, if you don't commit a crime, this doesn't apply to you.
That's right.
So, I mean, let's start there. You don't have to worry about it if you don't go commit a crime. But, you know, the numbers that were released from ICE said there are about 66,000, migrants that have come here illegally and then have actually committed a theft-related crime. And of those, 59,000 of those have been given their final orders of removal, which means that out of the 11 million people that are here illegally, out of the 7.8 million that are actually in, removal proceedings, the 1.4 million who we have given their due process and we say, you have to leave, out of that, 59,000 out of the 66 that have committed these crimes have been given their final order of removal. They shouldn't be here anyway.
No.
And so what we're saying is if you commit a crime, you go to the front of the line when it comes to detention and deportation.
Yeah, I love that. And oh, by the way, detaining them, not just letting them sort of bail out, if you will. I mean, they are a flight risk. The fact that they came here illegally indicates that they're willing to be someone who traverses and tries to run from things or run to things. So they are absolutely someone that needs to be detained so the full system can be brought to bear. Hey, listen, Senator, thank you for that, by the way. And I look forward to seeing that thing track. And I believe you already passed a procedural hurdle on this, didn't you?
We sure did. We passed our first large hurdle, the 60-vote threshold. We got 84 votes for it, 9 votes against it. Today we'll have a motion to proceed. That's at a 50-vote threshold. Then the next big vote, we will have some amendments most likely between next and the next big vote, which will be the last 60-vote threshold. And then there'll be another vote at a 50-vote threshold. So we've still got a lot of work in front of us. But what I want the people of Alabama and this country to know is I am diligently working to move this forward and to make sure that it is on a path to be on President Trump's desk on the day he is sworn in. I mean, how good will that feel?
No doubt.
To know that we are actually doing things that matter, that, you know, that that will keep our communities, that can keep our children safe, and that start to change the dynamic of what it means to come here illegally and commit crimes against American citizens. There are repercussions for that, and this will be a big moment.
Well, by the way, just so you know, too, today is the first day that we are live on the air in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So you're speaking to two states. So that's all. That's all.
Well,
actually,
hey,
actually
look,
multiple
Chattanooga
states.
Has two wonderful senators, U.S. senators representing them, and Bill Hagerty and Marsha Blackburn.
Yeah.
They are both fierce champions, not only of this bill, but on all the issues that matter, and certainly great partners, and it is a privilege to work with both of them.
Well, and I'm sure that and that is the case. I'm actually fans of them from a distance, but hopefully we'll have them on the show sometime.
We'll have to get them
future.
On the show.
Absolutely, absolutely.
We'll work on that. I'll say something to both of them, Phil.
Oh, thank you. Awesome. Great. And I appreciate that. And hey, listen, Senator, with about maybe 2.5 minutes left, confirmations start tomorrow. And I'm sure you're going to be sitting on some committee or another is going to have somebody come through it. But what are you thinking right now? What are we going to see all of them get through? Is there anybody who's still hung up on votes? Where are we looking right now with the confirmations process?
Yeah, look, we are excited. I think you can feel it in the conference. President Trump came and met with us last week. It was an exciting meeting because, you know, as I told you, kind of the dynamic shifted last summer when he came and met with all of us. You could feel a unity that I have not had an opportunity to feel as a Republican senator. That continued in that meeting last week. We talked about what we needed to get done. And the very first thing we know we need to do is get his people in place that can help execute his vision. And execute what is in front of us and what we need to do. So I feel good about this. I'll be for the very time on the Senate Judiciary Committee. I will be, you know, have Pam Bondi in front of me there in the Judiciary Committee. We've got a number of important ones moving forward. I think the Republican Conference writ large understands that we've got to get people in there that are willing to shake things up. Business as usual is not working. Business as usual is not what the American people voted for. They voted for transformational leaders that understand that we have got a window of time to take our country back. And so you're going to see that in these hearings. I have been so impressed with everyone that I've had an opportunity to meet with, every nominee. We've talked about their vision, how they'll execute President Trump's plan. And we've also had an opportunity to talk about Alabama. I mean, for instance, when, you know, I had Pete Hegseth come in, we talked about how important it is to have Space Command in Huntsville, Alabama,
yeah.
Its rightful home.
Yeah.
You know, we won, and now we won fair and square. There's a reason for it because Huntsville is the best location, Redstone Arsenal, for national security and to keep our country safe and to keep our prominence across the globe. But we talk about a number of issues when the EPA administrator came in, or, you know, soon to be EPA administrator, you know, talking about some of the things that have been impediments to our farm families. We know that they're the best stewards of their land and resources of anyone out there, and making sure that can continue to be the case, you know, by rolling back of that. Some of those things, some of the issues we've had with a number of things in the state, each and every person who comes and talks to us had the secretary, soon to be Secretary of Education, you know, Linda McMahon in here, the nominee for that, talked about school choice, talked about how critically important it is, talked about the steps that Alabama has made in that area and ways we can work together to continue to improve that across the country. So over and over and over again, they have just been exceptional meetings. They've been very transparent, Phil. I take my Article 2, Section 2 duties very, I hold that in the place that it needs to, which means I have to take this serious. I have to ask tough questions. I have
right.
to push and make sure that I get the answers the American people and the president need. And they, each of them, have been transparent, and I have been very pleased with the answers I've received. And so I'm excited about getting this cabinet confirmed. You know, I'm sure the Democrats will bring their best game, but these are good quality individuals who I hope we can get in there quickly and they can get to work.
Senator, as we part ways here, I don't know the answer to this. Is it a simple majority on the floor for confirmations? Is that what we need? Or
it is.
Okay.
As you know, things have kind of, they call it going nuclear and have busted the filibuster. It started with Harry Reid and then continued. And so,
right.
yes, nominees are just at a 50-vote threshold. So that'll be what we're working with. So we've got 53 Republicans. So technically we could lose three because we have J.D. Vance. We could lose three on any nominee. There are several nominees. John Fetterman and I were on Brett Baer last week on Common Ground to talk about the Laken Riley Act. And in that interview, John leaned into several of The nominees that he plans on voting for already. I've had several of my other colleagues on the floor as I've been, you know, working some of these nominees. They've asked me, kind of given me a list of people, and I've been talking to them diligently about trying to kind of garner a bigger bipartisan coalition for some of these nominees. So I think some of them will sail through. There will be others that will have a little bit more of a challenging dynamic. The things you're reading in, obviously in the paper and other and otherwise. But I do think truly the Republican conference is committed to giving this their very best to do their best to get these people across the finish line.
And Senator, I hate it, but I'm going to have to go to break now. But thank you so much for your time today. We look forward to what's happening. I'll be up at the inaugural next week. Maybe Charlene and I will see you. But we appreciate your time and what you're doing.
Absolutely. We'd love to see you. Hey, and good to obviously be in front of the people of Alabama, and welcome to the people from Chattanooga.
Absolutely. Thanks, Senator. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's U.S. Senator Katie Britton. Boy, we ran long, so we're gonna cram in a quick break, come right back, and probably cram in another one right after that. But then Congressman Gary Palmer coming. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, dropping truth bombs everywhere. So several text messages. Junebug from Hartsville checked in. She said, I never realized that Meatloaf Monday originated with Pruitt's Barbecue in Gadsden. She said, almost every time I'm working in Gadsden, I stop by Pruitt's for terrific barbecue. I guess I got a visit on a Monday now to try the meatloaf. Love your show. Thanks for all you do. Thank you, Junebug. Appreciate you.
Now I got to get them to sponsor it.
We do. Get them to sponsor Meatloaf Monday.
Yeah.
Well, what was the one we were talking about doing, Tater Tuesdays? We were willing to throw away Taco Tuesday if anybody knew Lawler's Barbecue that would want to advertise with us, because they do a Tater Tuesday with a barbecue stuffed tater.
I love Lawler's. Lawler's is awesome.
Brian from Decatur checked in. He said, sir, do you believe that any Democratic actor over the last 4 years will suffer any criminal or monetary civil penalties by the Republicans in the next 4 years through investigations? And personally, I don't think anyone's going to get disciplined or in any substantial way. There's a fine line there. There's some people that need to be called out hard, like Swalwell and Schiff. But I think we're going to have trouble getting criminal element attached to it because they have substantive immunity for their jobs. But some of them need it, Schiff especially. Thomas Mathen says, Kurt Russell is covert ops agent in the cult classic Escape from New York. Just saw him on another covert ops leader in F9 The Fast Saga with incredible auto wrecks and chases. Okay, there you go. And then John B. from ARAB. I'll read that one when I get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back, covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Huntsville to Chattanooga, Tuscaloosa to Gadsden. Big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. Right Side Radio, here we are. I'm going right now to the phones again. So we just had U.S. Senator Katie Britt on to talk about the Senate machinations. Well, we got a lot of things happening in the House, too. The House most recently passed the Laken Riley Act that they're now going to work on in the Senate, and that's awesome. It was bipartisan, strong stuff. We've also seen some really strong stuff coming out of the House most recently with the idea of the Trump agenda being on the forefront. And I want to talk to someone who's in the thick of it right now. Congressman Gary Palmer represents the 6th District of Alabama. He's a longtime conservative, founder of the Alabama Policy Institute, serving now in Congress and representing really Alabama and the Southeast quite well. Congressman Gary Palmer, how you doing, sir?
Good, Phil. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome back to the show. I really want to dive in with you, Congressman, if I could. There's been a lot of talk about the Trump agenda, so to speak. But I really believe that it's the Trump agenda by name, but it's really the Republicans' agenda overall. And there's talk about whether it's going to be a one omnibus reconciliation bill all in one, or whether we're going to see this thing spread out over several bills, pros and cons to both tactics. What do you see happening, and where are we going with all this?
Well, as the president says, I think it's going to be one big, beautiful bill, and that's what we're working on right now. Congressman Bruce Westman from Arkansas and I have been tasked with working on outside groups on some of the things that we want to get done in this thing, and particularly on estimating the impact. But I think that we will have one bill, and hopefully we'll have it passed out of the House before April 15th.
Yeah, that would be ideal. I mean, if we get it out of the House, now there's talk about the Senate trying to do their own version. Are they going to try and send you something that we have to reconcile, or what are we looking at here?
Well, typically, whatever we send over, there are changes made, and we have to go through reconciliation on the final product. But I don't know what the Senate's doing. And I would hope that the Senate would work on some other issues that we need to take up alongside the reconciliation bill. And but my focus right now is to get the absolute most we can possibly get done in this. And as I spoke to all of the, we had a meeting last Wednesday for the all of the Republicans in the House, and I was the last one to speak, and I pointed out to them that no one should look at this as the end of the process. There are a lot of people concerned if they don't get what they want in this reconciliation bill, they won't have enough chance. I said, this, you should not look at reconciliation as the end. You need to look at it as the beginning. And that's really how I'm going about this. And we'll have another opportunity if we want to do reconciliation again, and literally could do it later this year if we want to do that.
Well, Congressman, the batch of stuff that you're trying to send up 50th would include what? Border security, energy, Trump tax cuts. What all are you looking at the same time?
Well, I don't know that we can lump energy into it, because when it goes to the Senate, this gets kind of complicated. But there's something called the Byrd Rule, that whatever we send over has to comply with the Byrd Rule. And that basically, to simplify it, means it has to have a direct impact on the federal budget. So I think on some of the energy, we could make that case. But I've recommended something else to the White House for dealing with the permitting issues that I think that they're taking under serious consideration. But we're going to do the tax cuts, make it permanent. I think we're definitely going to take up the border enforcement part of it and have a pay for on that, which I've also made some recommendations on how to pay for this. I think there's some other issues that we could get into this reconciliation package. I'm looking at a number of expenditures that I honestly don't think the federal government should be making. We're looking at whether or not we can do it in this reconciliation bill, but we're looking at getting the RAINS Act in. I think that is the absolute game changer. And we've been making great progress in reining in the administrative state, started with the Supreme Court decision in West Virginia versus EPA, and then the decision that eliminated Chevron deference last summer, and now if we can get the RAINS Act passed, Phil, that is the absolute game changer for reining in the administrative state. And I think there are some other things that we can do dealing with improper payments. We're sending out somewhere between $230 and $240 billion each year in improper payments. And when you're looking at a 10-year window, that's $2.3 to $2.4
trillion, yeah,
and every nickel of it's borrowed. I mean, we're doing some stuff that's just, I mean, for lack of a better word, it's just flat stupid.
Yeah, you couldn't run a household or a business like this. I mean, the house would go into bankruptcy. The business would shut down. The only place where you're allowed to fail up is in government, typically speaking. But
well, yeah, you got that right. And but I think we're pulling back the covers on everything that we possibly can. Because we're at a point now where we've got to reduce our debt to as a percentage of our economy. We've got to rein in the deficit spending. We can't keep borrowing money to fund things that really the private sector ought to take care of, that a lot of the stuff, Phil, we have no business doing to start with. And we got to treat, I think we need to treat every dollar like it was one of our dollars. I can guarantee you that I treat my dollars very seriously on what I spend in my personal spending, and I think we ought to do the same thing with what we spend of other people's money.
Well, I completely agree. You know, and I'm excited to see what happens here. There's a lot of talk about how quickly some of this needs to happen. I mean, I think folks think of it in terms of a 4-year window, but the reality is you've got a guaranteed 2-year window. The midterms are always a little dicey for the party in power. Margins are so thin right now in D.C. that this first 2 years is going to be really the crux of what we're able to see happen with the agenda. Am I right?
Well, I really think it's the first 8 to 10 months, because when you get into next year and you'll have members facing primaries, it's going to be election season, and it's harder to get people to make courageous votes. And I made that case, too, at another meeting with our members, that C.S. Lewis, to paraphrase C.S. Lewis, courage is the greatest of all virtues because it validates all other virtues. Hmm. You may have the virtue of honesty, but if it's going to cost you something to be honest, do you have the courage to adhere to that virtue, to be honest? And that's what I've told my colleagues. If you want to be a great Congress, you got to realize you don't achieve greatness doing easy things.
Ah, there you go.
We're going to have to make some votes that are going to cost us something. But I think if we do, I think if the American public sees that we're doing the right thing and that we have the backbone to get these things done, I think they'll stand with us.
Well, and I agree. And Senator, I mean, Congressman, I think we're looking for that. I mean, I think the reality is, and I speak for a lot of right side ruffians who listen to this show in multiple states, we're looking for that right now. There's an anticipation, if you will, about riding the ship of state in many ways. But at the same time, it has to be something that is measurable, that we can look at and go, look, this actually happened. And I think that's the excitement that the American public have with, you know, getting everything going. Let me ask you this. I saw it all the time in Montgomery during my time in the state legislature. A lot of times people come in and they have their own niche. Maybe their background says military or background says fiscal. Is there any particular thing that, because of your own background, that you're most excited about with the agenda on the table right now?
Well, I've been working on a Western Hemisphere alliance as a soft power alternative to China, because we're in a situation right now, Phil, where our reliance on China for critical minerals and rare earth elements, the things that we have to run our economy, to keep our military operational, it's now a national security problem for us. And I've been working on this for about 3 years to advance our ability to mine what we need in terms of these critical minerals and rare earth elements. But more than that, we've got to have facilities to process them and facilities to refine them so that we can turn them into the products we need for microchips, semiconductors, that sort of thing. And then on the energy side, I think we've got an opportunity to absolutely be an energy superpower. But on the bigger picture, looking at these emerging economies in Latin America and Sub-Saharan Africa, and looking at how dependent Europe's in the same boat we're in, Phil, in terms of our dependence on China for these things, and how this thing is coming together and people are waking up and realizing that China's not your friend. I'm really excited about what could be an historic change in terms of the geopolitics right now, that it's our best non-confrontational way to deal with China and what they're doing in our own hemisphere in particular.
Well, and I tell you what, yes, on a geopolitical stance, I agree. I think there's been a whole lot of deference given to China by the Biden administration that they didn't deserve. And a whole lot of, I would say, leading from behind. And I look forward to us leading from the front again. Well,
the Biden family was heavily invested in, let me respect that. China was heavily invested in the Biden family.
Yeah.
And so that might explain a lot of what's been going on the last 4 years.
I think sooner or later we're going to find out that somebody in a foreign country had pictures of somebody in the Biden family in a drawer and they were using that as leverage.
Or they gave them $5 million loan with no requirement to pay it back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gave them some jewelry that's worth about $70,000 or $80,000 that one of the Biden family said that got lost in the trash. So it's, but we don't need to go there. That's old news, and and the main perpetrator got pardoned, and I imagine there'll be some other pardons coming down the pike in the next few days.
Yeah, probably in the next 48 hours.
Could be.
Well, Congressman, we look forward to it. I mean, like, really, with anticipation. It's been a target-rich environment for me to talk about things that weren't going right for the last 4 years, but I look forward to talking forward on what we're going to be seeing and doing, and I appreciate you being in the mix. Thanks for your work for conservative policy for years, and thanks for your time in the Congress.
Well, I always appreciate being on with you, Phil, and congratulations on getting into the Chattanooga market. I hope the people listening in Tennessee realize how much value you're going to bring to the radio waves up there, and you do a great job. I think that audience is going to really appreciate having you up there in that market.
Well, thank you much. That means the world. And Charlene and I'll be at the inaugural events next week. Maybe we'll see you around.
Hope to see you.
All right, take care now, Congressman Gary Palmer, representing the 6th District of Alabama. By the way, he's been in leadership for quite a while now in the arena of policy for the Republican caucus. He knows of what he speaks. All right, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come right back, and we'll just dive on in. I got a few text messages to clean up, and then, yeah, we got Dipper number 2 coming. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right. Hey, listen, what is happening out there? Just want you to know that we are live at the AM out of Chattanooga and glad to have them in the red fold. So all you folks in Chattanooga that may be listening for the first time, just know this, Right Side Ruffians is what we call our folks. And if you want to be a Right Side Ruffian, we're proud to have you. If you're a freedom-loving, Second Amendment-toting, gun-toting, patriotic, flag-waving kind of person, then yep, you fit right in. Hey, by the way, there's a text line number here, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. You can text it or call it. That's the number that gets to the show. Here's one more thing, though, that we've been doing for a while now. We have a daily newsletter that goes out by email called The Right Side Report. If you want to get on the Right Side Report, which gives you all the insights about our podcast, latest things happening with the radio show, what's coming up that day before anybody else knows it, all the things that we got going on here at Right Side Media, some of our op-eds that are written and published around the region, then just know this. If you want to get the newsletter, the Right Side Report, all you got to do is with that phone number I gave you a minute ago, text the word newsletter. It's all one word, newsletter. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text the word newsletter. It'll send you an automated response back letting you sign up. You'll get it every single day, no cost, and we'd love to add you to the fold. So, yeah, newsletter for a Right Side Report every single day. What you got, man?
But also, the live stream of the day of the show, don't know if any of the Chattanoogans who... I said Chattanoogans again. I hope that's the right. I hope that's the right term, because if it's not, we look silly. But if they weren't listening earlier, we live stream the show every day. If they want to check it out on YouTube, also on our website, rightsidemedia.org, on X at @SinPhilWilliams, and then rightside_media, also on Twitch and Rumble. So go check it out, and while you're there, give us a follow. That would help us a lot. So we'd greatly appreciate it.
Good stuff, man. All right. Hey, listen, a couple more things in this wrapping up of the changing of the guard. Two things that I'm really excited about that are happening right now. First of all, you may be interested to know townhall.com reporting that the first DOGE agents have arrived in D.C. DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, the extra governmental, non-governmental agency that's going to be providing input to the Trump administration, to the Congress. Directed by Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy. They aim to cut over $2 trillion in the federal budget, right? And to do that, they got to have people that are rooting through government, finding waste, finding things to cut, finding excess staffing, all of it. Well, the first batch of them, like 50 of them, are already working out of the SpaceX offices in Washington. And they're looking at hiring up to 100 people. These are not government employees. These are people that are being interviewed for the sole purpose of seeing if they have the mission mindset to jump on in there and help make government more streamlined and efficient. So I'm looking forward to that. The DOGE agents, are they going to have a badge? I think they'll carry a badge.
They need a DOGE
badge. Need at least a T-shirt.
It can be a badge of the Doge, the dog, and the coin, you know.
When they start selling T-shirts, we got to make sure we get one.
Yeah. By the way, Gary Palmer is going to be on the Doge Caucus, isn't he?
He is. Yeah, absolutely. Good point. The Doge Caucus includes Gary Palmer, who was just on a moment ago. And then here's the other one. The southern border. Tom Homan. The guy feels like a pit bull, like he's on a chain. Just let him, let the man go. And he said that Trump has given him three priorities: secure the southern border, launch a large-scale deportation program, and locate the 300,000-plus undocumented children who have now gone missing within the United States, which to me is one of the biggest. I mean, that's what I wrote about. My op-ed came out today. 1819news.com has the first run at it every week. And it's called, What Did You Do with the Children? And the idea that we have 320,000 children who came across the border unaccompanied, who were just handed off. Oh, you say you're the uncle? Sure, take one. Which one do you want? Which one's yours? Oh, we don't know you from Adam, but we didn't do a DNA test, but you look like you might be related. Who knows? It's just nauseating. 320,000 kids. This is the kind of thing that nations are judged for by future generations. And so I'm looking forward to that being, I'm so glad to hear that in terms of the changing of the guard, that is one of the missions for Tom Homan, the border czar. It's not just securing the border. It's not just deporting them. It's also locating 300,000 precious minors who have just been like lost by the Biden administration, which ought to be a class action lawsuit at some point. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. Coming up with some home fries. We'll be right back.